Hey, what's up, Internet? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and creative entrepreneurs looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. Welcome to episode 158, How to Constantly Learn and Grow, with Gant Laborde. Gant is an entertaining public speaker, science nerd, and chief technology strategist at Infinite Red. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, he shares his programming journey from the early days of video games, wrestling for computers, and printer shenanigans, to transforming his work daily by pushing himself to learn new things by any means possible. He also touches on the importance of being yourself, the impact of Toastmasters on his life, and the four books he would give to anyone looking to become more influential leaders. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/158. All right, let's get into this interview with Gant. Gant, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little about what you do?
Oh, well, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. Let's see, the common statements of what I do and like who I am. There's always the published author, adjunct professor, dog owner, open sorcerer, Toastmaster, half centaur. That's the bottom half. And I'm a worldwide public speaker, which has been my latest adventure.
So when did you know you wanted to be all of those things? Because you just listed about 17 things. And has it been you set out to do all those things, or did they just naturally happen over time?
Well, first off, let me say that I still don't know what I do. I have a running joke with my family, where either I am way too technical in what I do, or I'm way too abstract in what I do. So every time I see my mom, she's like, hey, honey, I saw somebody the other day and they asked what you do. Can you explain it again? And so I think like where I'm at now, which is the most important, sort of like the denouement of what's going to happen. It's taken me a while to realize, but I'm just like very passionate about science and technology. Mm-hmm. And I got here specifically from video games. I know everybody says video games, right? Like, it's like you can't not. But here's the thing, like that's our first computer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could be any kid you want and they hand you a computer and you're like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. But they hand you a video game and you are the master of it. Like that is your world, that's your architecture, that's your imagination. And so when I was a kid, I played Nintendo games constantly instead of doing anything.
Like classic NES?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Just the worst Nintendo games. I bought the ones that like should have never been made. I just loved it. It was the idea of controlling TV. As a matter of fact, I would try to control the people on TV. You know, when you're a kid, you're just still working the controller. You're like, I want to know what this does. And, you know, one day, my family actually is very anti-computer. All the way from my dad and my mom. My brother and my sister are awesome. But my sister, she moved out when she was 18. So my dad was forced to have a work computer. Hmm. And my buddy, actually, who's my coworker now, but back when we were kids, he was just my neighbor, Frank Von Hoven, made my dad's computer say, "Hello, Gant." And I was like, okay, I think that we found something here. This is what I need in my life. Like, you made the video game talk to me. We actually interacted. Mm-hmm. And then I started coding like crazy. And I would go to anybody's house possible and get on their computer. And I started really late for, you know, the computer generation. But, man, I was like set to catch up. And, you know, my family didn't make that too easy. I always had the oldest, worst computers. I was like, hey, you know what I want to be when I grow up? A computer programmer. And they're like, you can start with this old thing. It can almost get on AOL. And I was like, oh, great. That's where I'm at. So that's sort of where this passion that was inside of me, I didn't understand it. I didn't really kind of identify with it until I just loved science and craft and creating things. And now I found some people who are willing to pay me to do that.
That's pretty awesome. What was the first computer language that you programmed in?
Basic. QBasic, to be fair. It was QBasic. All the basic people would be making fun of me, but I used QuickBasic. Nice. I had apps that would ask you questions. I had apps that would make the screen flash and do crazy stuff. I actually, my high school girlfriend, for her birthday, I wrote her a love letter app that she could run, and it would full screen and like show hearts and stuff like that. And then in college, I wrote, I moved on to Visual Basic, which all my college professors told me would ruin my brain. And they were right. And so I made apps like every 60 seconds, this dog would run across your screen. And I made one that would wait some designated amount of time and then start printing on your printer. I'm a printer, feed me paper, and just use every piece of paper that you had. This is before recycling, right? So it was okay back then. Right. I had so much fun just writing terrible apps. And it was just, I think that there's like that part of you that wants to be creative and explore. And it really helped me out, because by the time I actually took my first programming course, I was way ahead of what was going on in the course. And actually, I could see where things would end up, because they love just killing the passion in everybody's eyes. Like, just the whole room is like, if I can get half this room to drop this class, I'm a really good college professor. Like, I don't know what their metrics really are, but that's pretty close to what it felt like. So it was a lot of fun, and that got me through all that, got me through the math classes. And then I realized like math is actually important, and it kind of really gave me a lot of direction, just being excited.
Did you ever need permission when you were starting, or did your natural enthusiasm just override all of that like a bull in a china shop?
I did need permission, and I did override it. So here's a quick story. My dad was 10-year state champion weightlifter, and he basically told me that I had to wrestle or else I could not have a computer. I was like, what? This doesn't make sense. He's like, you have to do something and all stuff. And I don't know if you've ever seen, there's this TV show where the dad starts opening the bar mitzvah money for the kid. And he's like, now we have to pay for your bar mitzvah. And he just starts pocketing all the cash. That was my dad. Like, he was like, hey, great Christmas and birthday. Let's see if this buys you a computer. And he just took all the money from it. And I had to wrestle. It was all these things. And so I did. I wrestled. I jumped through all the hoops. I made ends meet, and I got my computer. And it was, it's not a sweet victory because I did, but it sure as hell wasn't going to stop me.
Yeah. That's really cool. And I think too, from what I've heard from other people, that learning how to kind of balance between family obligations and your own passions is very critical when we're finding things, especially things that maybe parents don't quite understand, Will Smith style.
That's right. Parents just don't understand. You know, I used to wrestle with my demons, and now we just cuddle, so it's okay. We're good now. But I feel like everybody has this sort of like venture of trying to be understood while they're finding themselves as well. And to be fair, you know, it's because my dad cared that he wanted me to wrestle. It's because my dad cared that he wanted me to do these things. And yeah, sure enough, he didn't understand. This wasn't just fun for me. This was my life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fair enough. That's pretty much every child's story about their dad.
Yes. So moving from permission and you're a programmer adjunct professor, book author. So what systems do you have in place to help you manage all of that and also have a sustainable career and a sustainable life?
Yeah, it's important to be balanced, but there are certain things that I know are sure shots right away, right? You can hear them and you know they're good. One, I will always invest in myself. I will spare no expense educating myself. Mm. That value is there for the rest of your life, and it's really important. So if you go to a bookstore and you're looking at something, you're like, wow, I'm very interested in this. I'm pretty sure that this is like, I feel that fire, that motivation, kind of like the challenge to learn, start kind of welling up inside when I'm looking at this. It doesn't matter what the price of those books are. It doesn't matter in the least, like, that's not where you cut budget, right? You can eat a little bit less. You can see your friends a little bit less. You can go to fewer movies. But what you really need is anytime you're investing with you, nobody can take that away. Mm. And I know from immediate that if I see that, the answer is just yes. I'd rather be replete with things that make me a better person than juggling things that might be good for me in a short term. Hmm. And those always make the cut. The rest of it, you know, sometimes it's like you're going through that junk drawer of your life and you're like, man, I know I'm going to need this one day, but just going to have to get rid of it to make space and time and make myself happy with what's going on. And those are probably the harder questions, but honestly, those are the small decisions.
Yeah. What's something that you recently removed from the junk drawer of your life that had actually a good outcome, if you're willing to talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see. One of the things that I've gotten really big into recently, and this is sort of kind of a level up kind of moment. Hmm. I was really afraid I wouldn't get accepted to speak at some places. And so every time a CFP, you know, call for proposals or papers or whatever it actually stands for, nobody really knows. agree to disagree. What happens is that was scary to me that I would say, hey, I'm really kind of getting into the speaking gig and I wouldn't get accepted to enough places or that it wouldn't actually be there. So I applied to everything. And it was, you know, that it worked out really, really well. But I've reached this new point where it's sort of like the success has kind of come wrapped back around. And now it's important for me not to just accept every single opportunity that comes in. It has to be a value. And I can look through the lens of my experience now and say, that's a good conference. This is a possibly good conference. That's a place I want to go to. And I hope the conference is good, right? There's so many different ways you can think about it. But I've rejected now some conferences that I really thought might be fun just simply because those, if they get accepted, they're going to put a giant hole in my schedule and they're going to mess me up with the things that I really need to take care of that sort of make this all work out. And the other thing that you do is that now you get as an invited speaker, and that's pretty fun too. But if I get invited to go to Poland for JavaScript Grill, right, which is going to be the coolest 50 people in, you know, like, that's not going to be good for my career, for me, for the company I work for, or anything, to fly all the way to Poland for JavaScript Grill. That's a spot in my life that I would have been at, but I needed to kind of evaluate. And now everything's now that the plate filled up, it's time to kind of come back and look at the drawer and say, is this something I need? Is this something useful? And I think that it's kind of nice because as this process, this refinement process, it doesn't have to be, oh my goodness, now we have the junk room. right? Where I have to figure out, we said yes to this filing cabinet and no files have been in it for 15 years. What are we doing with it? As sort of an iterative process, it actually stays with you and it's something that you got to do. It's like showering. It's like preening. It's something that, I feel that is a rhythm. And once that rhythm's in place, it can always be improved.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, I imagine that was a learning process to kind of figure that out.
Oh yeah. I went all the way up to 1,000 and came back down. I mean, if you take a look at anybody beginning something, they look like they're flailing and they're manic and they have no idea. But at the same time, if that's where you really want to be, right, then you will straighten up and fly right because you're doing that. Like, hey, I really want to get good at swimming, so I'm going to read a book on it. Nah, you get in the water, right? You go get in there. I want to ride a bike. You don't read a book about it. You get on a bike. And there's going to be some, you look really bad and really dumb for a little while. And then ultimately you kind of come back and it refines itself as long as you keep working on it.
So you've mentioned a lot about reading books to learn new things. Is that your primary method of approaching learning new things, or do you do other things as well?
Books used to be my favorite. I will definitely say I loved those. There used to be these books called Sam's Teach Yourself Blah in 21 Days and Sam's Teach Yourself Blah in 24 Hours.
Yes.
I never touched the For Dummies books. Not as a source of pride, but simply because those were not to really give you a new spell, right? Like if you're a wizard, you read this book and then you have a new power. And that's what would happen. And it's really cool because like every time, let's say it took you a month to read the 21 Days book. Oh, yeah. Look at you, slow learner. Guess what? Doesn't matter. You got you've got this new skill that you can do. And that was the best when those books came out. Those of you who know that book know how awesome it is. But today it's not just books. Mm-hmm. Today, you are armed with a set of skills that are multidimensional. You have videos of people doing things. You have learning by stories, examples, free courses, and then of course books and forums and communication that we're so interconnected that I can't really feel like anybody with the internet has an excuse not to learn something they wanted to learn. They're mm-hmm. like, you know, I always wish I had learned the state capitals. It's like, well, I'm sure you could find somebody who's got a set of mnemonic devices, the app for it, and then also a song that you can sing. Like there's so much out there today that it's like, it's not even, is there media for it? It's, hey, I get to shop for which media works for me. And it's just a fantastic spot. So I wouldn't say books unless there was a need to like build a scaled, structured authority on a subject, then books are very, 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 very good. But I also think that you cannot say, I will just read this book. You got to go do the outside reading. You got to actually like teach yourself these things and look at it and look up the references. You know, you have access to the world's libraries, right? Mm-hmm. At your fingertips. So anybody who's using that is doing what they want to do.
Hmm. As you're talking, you're describing this world of amazing knowledge at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. How do you not get overwhelmed? How do you take it all in and yet feel like you're not drowning in information?
I do drown in information. I do. I am. This is not a podcast. This is a cry for help. I really do miss something. So for instance, I'm trying to teach myself Spanish before I go to Spain. I will fall off the horse. I will. And there's a good reason why I'll fall off the horse. Family events, Just have to work on something else. It's not as exciting because it's getting tough. And so I start to slow down. But I think that that's actually, it's a corny answer, but it is definitely, I have this, since I have the passion, I have the willpower to do it. And I might not be the best at it. Like I said, I never finished a 21 days book in 21 days. And I never finished a 24 hours book in 24 hours, but I finished those books. And that's really kind of the initiative there, because when you first get in there, it's okay not to know what's the best thing. I mean, little kids, they don't care about the quality of the football they're throwing in the front yard, right? And then you get to some point where you know what you like. Mm-hmm. And when you know what you like, it's easy to cut through all that noise.
I think that brings up a nice transition to something that I'm impressed by you with.
Oh.
Impressed by you with? Impressed with you. Something that impresses me about you is something that impresses me about you is your ability to not only have a brand inside of a company, but actually have a brand in the greater technical community.
Thank you.
And it's fascinating because it creates a full image of you as a professional. And I wonder how you manage both aspects of mm-hmm. that brand.
Well, I can tell you the first thing that's really kind of keyed in here that might not be part of how I got this gig is the fact that if I'm not me, I can't connect with people. I think that there's a really funny story that I heard this past weekend about this guy who everybody knew he was a terrible dancer. Like, he was the worst dancer. Like, he'd go to parties and they were like, please stop. Right. And he didn't care. He was just him. And so they went to this one spot, and I think it might have been a cruise ship, and there was a dance competition. Right. And so the guy goes to do the dance. And they're like, please do not. We will not cheer for you. We will not say anything. And so he's like, too bad, I'm doing it. And so they do the dance competition. The first guy comes out and he's good. The next guy comes out and he's just amazing. Like, he's like a break dancer and everything like that. And the third guy is their friend. And he gets up there and he is dancing the dumbest, grooviest, weirdest dance possible. And they're like, oh my God, I hope nobody notices that we were next to this guy. And then they did Who Wins by a round of applause. And the second guy, and then believe it or not, their friend, the third guy, got an equal amount of applause. So they did a dance off. And this time the other guy's busting out amazing moves and their friend is just getting weirder and crazier. And by a clear victory, he won. He got the trophy for being the best dancer. Because he went out there and he was himself, and that connected with everybody. Like, this guy had no formal training. He just was feeling the music, being weird, being crazy. And that made everybody interested in him. And I think that's the true essence for us to, like, connect. If I'm not going to be me, if I'm trying to be somebody else, human beings are smart. They're going to identify that there's something not clicking there, and that's going to cause a problem. So what I think is really cool about this is that if I didn't have my personal brand, right, as well, if I didn't have this kind of interaction, then I would be failing, you know, as to represent the company that sort of has its own brand as well. But what's really funny about this as well is, like, they know that. So I get supported. I'm the guy up there dancing this disgusting dance in front of hundreds of people. And they're like, go, go, dude, go. And they know that kind of comes back. And we have this sort of great relationship and this connection because of that. And if we're not authentic, well, then, I mean, how could you be passionate about being inauthentic, right? At that point, you're playing some kind of game. And I think in the world of brand and people, and now that we're so connected, you can't fake it for a little while and then just step off the podium and then be something else. You gotta bring something that is always there and always true. Because if you take a look at Twitter, you've got this person saying like, here I am doing this and saying that. Yanni Evankilo, I can't even say his name correctly, but we're good friends. We're like this, right? That's why I can't say his name. He gave me some really great advice. He says, the best Twitter advice I can give you is be the most you can be. And that struck a chord as well, because in so many different ways, that's the person I know how to be. So I think it's pretty nice that I get to do this and I get to kind of bring something back for everybody as well. I'm supported and trusted to do this. And so I really kind of owe a lot of that back to people who trust and support me. It's a great feeling. And I could tell you, I've worked at 100 jobs that didn't do that. It wasn't until I said, I'm worth it, that I found the one that did.
Wow. What was that point, though, of saying that you are worth it? Like, was it like an intellectual exercise, or did you just reach a breaking point?
So I was stuck in sweat shop kind of like go nowhere jobs, and I just don't jive with that. And I was sitting in one, I'm not going to name the company, but basically they were paying for us to die at our desk. I don't think we did any work, and everybody around me was really good at covertly watching YouTube. They were like YouTube ninjas. I'm not even sure if that's a real thing, but that's what they were.
And they're called influencers now. Right.
And yeah. And what I was doing is I was at my desk and I didn't, you know, I immediately partook in the YouTube like delights and got like sick to my stomach as a consumer. And I said, you know what? I'm using this time to work on cool stuff. Like, I'm working on things that I think are amazing. And that inevitably helped me work consistently on things that everybody else saw, you know? So at the job, they were like, whatever, Gant, we don't care what you have to say. But outside of there, I was getting offered to write a book. That's actually where I wrote the book at that job. And then I had other people saying, hey, can you do some consulting? Can you do this? Can we work on that? And through sort of these initiatives, I found that as long as I continued on with what I cared about, I would connect with other people who cared about their stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's just a great community to be a part of. And you don't ever look back. You don't say, hey, I really wish I could go around people who hate their day job. I want to go back to people who, you know, just they don't believe in each other. They're trying to figure out how to become promoted without, you know, ruining the weird nobody should work mentality. Like, that's just disgusting. Mm-hmm. And now I'm around people who, you know, like you're passionate about this sort of communication, this podcast. You do a high quality podcast and you have interesting people on, and except for today, I'm the exception. And what's really cool is that, like, you know, something inside yourself changes when you're constantly around people like that. And it becomes a little bit easier. I'm reminded that everybody thought the 4-minute mile was impossible until somebody ran the 4-minute mile, and then listings of people also running 4-minute miles happened that same exact year. Hmm. Like, all of a sudden everybody's like, you can do this. So people started to do it. And that's sort of the same thing, is if you surround yourself with people who are constantly pushing themselves, it's really hard to sit on the couch and eat Doritos.
So what's one thing in the future you're actively working to make happen now? It doesn't need to be an internal project, but just what, like, something out there in the horizon that you're just really passionate about.
I would say that I really want to become a keynote speaker at a conference. That's sort of something I didn't really realize. But being a keynote speaker feels like this spot that says, hey, not only is the conference think you've met this, but you think you've met this, and you're going to get out there and you're going to do some of your life's work, right? You're going to do something that's artful and beautiful and that you'll be proud of. And I want to push myself to that point, and I want to have someone else say, we want to see that, and then put you in that spot. So that's sort of my next North Star, especially in that spectrum, is I want to find such a grand placement of me to say, all right, let's see what I've got. Like, I have to set the tone for this entire thing. Let me see what I can do there, and let's see how it turns out. And then I want to do another one and another one. But yeah, that's where I'm looking for right now.
That's awesome. Is that what a lot of energy you spend behind the scenes in terms of like Toastmasters and preparing for that?
So Toastmasters started off as I really like to speak in front of people and not shake. So I went to my local Toastmasters club, which has 30 people, and I practiced speaking in front of 30 people every week and had fun with that. And now people look at me and they say, well, now you don't have a fear of speaking in front of people, so why do you keep going? And I'm like, I'm on that next level, right? Mm-hmm. I want to see how far I can ride this train and have it go. So Toastmasters originally was not this vision. It was not to work on leadership. It was not to work on being an excellent public speaker. It started off with, let me just get rid of this nastiness that causes me to like hold myself back. Mm-hmm. And when you're there, you run into a bunch of other self-help book reading nerds and happy people, and then you go, okay, I can grow here.
So speaking of self-help reading books, what's one book or resource that has impacted your life?
Ooh, definitely Everything by the Great Cialdini. Robert Cialdini.
Is he a magician? No.
He sounds like it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I'm scientific in my perspective, and Cialdini was really good at writing books that sort of explain some of the most important aspects of psychology in a way that's exciting to me, that's really fun, and he backs everything up with a scientific study. So if you could have all these scientific studies that are geared towards making you a more influential and persuasive person, and just download all that information and opinion, Cialdini's got so many books. The first one I read from him was called 50 Scientifically Proven Ways to Be Persuasive. And that was like, he was one of the three people on that book. Mm-hmm. And he starts off with just, here's a study, here's how they did this better. Here's a study, here's how they did it better. And he goes through 50 of them in a short book, and you're kind of like, oh man, this is awesome, you know? And then you're like, okay, that's fine. Then he did another book called Influence, and I was actually listening to Influence. Sometimes I buy the book, sometimes I listen, depending on what my schedule is. I was listening to Influence, and I was like, wait a second, I recognize this name. And then I saw that it was one of the same authors. I was like, oh, this is so great. So I committed to memory the six weapons of influence, right? Hmm. And then he wrote a book called Persuasion, which is another amazing book that really, really helps out. And then I would follow up with, there's a book called Made to Stick, which basically is not Cialdini, but they reference Cialdini constantly in their studies. So if someone were like, hey, I want to become better heard and more influential in my life and in my day, I would buy them those four books, wrap them up in a big bow and be like, here, lay off the Harry Potter for a little while and read these in this order. And tell me if at the end of it, you don't see things in a light that you never saw before. Honestly, every time I write an email, I'm about to hit send. I dial it back for a minute and I reread my emails going through the things that I've learned to see if there's something that should be tweaked or turned up or dismissed or reevaluated. And then I send the email, and that sort of mindfulness, you can't have it if you don't know what the hell you're looking for. So that's been the most amazing books by far. Any Cialdini book.
Awesome. Well, Gant, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to share with the Getting Work to Work audience. As always, it's a pleasure, and I hope that you have an awesome day coding and speaking and teaching and leading.
Thank you so much.
Woo woo!
Yay! That's fun.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It means so much to me that you're here. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and people who need a framework for learning and growing in their lives and in their careers? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. You can drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com or at cmstudios on Twitter. I love this quote from Gant that he dropped in this episode. He said, "We are so interconnected that I can't really feel like anybody with the internet has an excuse not to learn something they wanted to learn." What do you want to learn? Do a Google search, find a video on YouTube, reach out to someone that's already doing it. You have all of the resources at your disposal to do whatever you want to do. So go do it. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.